We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. I'm Councilmember Dennis Kavanaugh. I'm chairing the meeting today in the absence of the mayor and vice mayor, who are excused as they are out of town on city business. We have two items for presentation and action this morning. And first one is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Parks and Recreation Bond Program funding and estimated schedule. Mr. Hirschberg.
Good morning, council members. Dan Clevenger, Mark Hirschberg. Appreciate the opportunity to go over this again after the election. This is our first opportunity to come back to you and really kind of lay out a time frame and where we're at with the bond program. The one thing I wanted to emphasize is that we're really working hard to leverage our general fund dollars and grant dollars to really make this bond program really efficient and get as much bang for our buck as possible over the next 4 years, which we said in the all the presentations this would be a four-year program, but really emphasizing it, the $70 million, the $6.2 million that's typically
Councilwoman Higgins.
I'm sorry, you just said something that was a new to me. Besides this, the four-year program, when did we decide it was going to take 4 years to do the bond program? Well, I mean, to do the whole part. I guess I was surprised by that when I read the presentation.
Just based on the mass of the projects and everything that was going on, we said we would roll this out over the next 4 years.
When did we say that first, though?
I've been saying it since
I think in all our presentations. Every time we've done a bond package, we've always done it over multiple years. We can't.
Well, multiple, yeah, but I guess.
Well, I'm going to say typical. To date, whether it's the public safety bonds, the street bonds, we've always said we went from 5 to 4. If we accelerate it, it'll dramatically change the cost on the tax, because we try to spread it out as a drawdown of $70 million over the 4 years, like we would do on any bond program. And I think we've tried to present that as from the beginning as that's our typical. Every time we've issued bonds, every time we've done a CIP program on bonds, it's been a 4 to 5 year program.
Councilmember Glover, you had a question.
Well, no, I'm along with Councilwoman Higgins. During the presentations, I never heard the four-year implementation, and neither did a lot of the residents in my district as well. So that was just a miscommunication, I take it. But there's some of the things I know we're going to get to the actual schedule of the different projects, but I'm kind of curious why they're in this order and how you determine them to be in that order and that kind of prominence. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll get to one of the things, as Mr. Brady mentioned, was the funding. And I apologize if there was confusion, but we've talked about implementing O&M over 4 years, all those things coming in. We've been talking about the 4 years, so I apologize if that wasn't clearly communicated.
Mark, and again, I'm going to echo what my colleagues have said, because I don't recall hearing 4 years and discussions and presentations to the city council. Obviously, bond issues, I anticipate that they will be done over a several-year period of time, but that it surprised me as well that it is spread out over such a long period of time, because I don't recall that in any of the information that we provided to voters. And I don't really remember that in our discussions. It may have been city staff's intention all along in discussion at the manager's meetings and with finance, but that's just I just have to share that I share the concerns that expressed by Councilwoman Higgins and Councilmember Glover.
In terms of priorities and where we are at, again, back to the financing of where this was going, we are looking at to keep those costs and the taxes at that right level at $17 million a year. So really it was a balancing of act of trying to get those projects to line up with financing to make those dollars work. That's why we're here to present to you, and you're more than welcome to reprioritize and change things around the way you see fit. But this was just us taking a first stab at where we need to go, knowing the emerging things that need to happen in terms of some river views, obviously underway, the Taylor Pool replacement. It becomes a priority just because of the aging infrastructure on that site. But we'll get into that. Again, back to the funding, though, $70 million in funds, general fund dollars of $6.2 million, which is been allocated over the last several years in the Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities General Fund for infrastructure improvements to help us keep up with that. So again, rolling those in to help with some of those improvements. And then grant funding, Mr. Clevenger and his staff have already received a $1 million grant for trail improvements, and will continue to leverage those dollars when possible. Again, the project categories there, the park conversion and improvement projects, the community partnership projects, which are those in conjunction with the school district, the I-MESA renovation and enhancement projects, which is the biggest category of $39 million, new park development projects, which include some land acquisitions for future expansion, and the bike and pedestrian paths. When we look at these timeframes, we're looking at dates of completion. So a lot of these projects will actually begin a year and a half before with the design and the community outreach. So they'll be going on in advance, but the actual completion date won't be until we estimate this proposed fiscal year. Again, Riverview Park, which is already going. The existing park improvements, we've prioritized the park system in terms of where the improvements we see, whether it's sports field lighting, playground replacements, irrigation enhancements, those type of things. The Taylor Pool renovation, again, there are discussions going on about with the school district and the community about the exact location of that. Originally, if you recall in our presentations early on, we talked about Mesa High being the location for this pool. At the time, during the bond elections, the school district said they weren't interested in participating on that. We went back to Taylor. The community has reengaged both the city and the school district to look at possibly making Mesa High work. So we're still waiting for a final confirmation for the school district on whether they're going to participate in that project. The other thing I did want to just go back real quick, the thing I wanted to emphasize that some two important acquisitions are going on right now. We're currently in negotiations for the property at Buckhorn Bass. We acquired one piece of a property at Monterey Park for that expansion and are in negotiations and working through the process for the second parcel that we targeted for expansion there too. So those are ongoing now. Again, 14-15 completion dates. Those, again, are the completion dates. We'd be looking at the in the park conversion and improvement projects area, the McDowell and Recker project, which is the urban mountain bike park and BMX track out there, McKellips and Ellsworth, which is taking the site next to the Harris Elementary School and doing some interpretive paths and trails through there. The I-MESA renovation and enhancement projects is looking at Kleinman Park and beginning to turn that into the first phase of a youth sports facility, multi-use sports facility between baseball, softball, and soccer, which will eventually be coupled with Powell across the street. Again, focusing on existing park improvements. And in the new category, final designs completed for the downtown urban plaza. This is one where you've seen in the paper probably that the city has reached out and partnered with Arizona State University, who created a special topics class this semester called Placemaking Mesa, where they will actually help us through this process and create some focus groups and do some design studies to look at that project as well and help us move that forward. We are also going to engage the help of the planning department to make sure that we tie in with the Central Mesa plan and coordinate that effort accordingly.
In addition to the projects Mark's been talking about, we have included three shared use path projects for bicycles and pedestrians. These were based, the priority order on these are just largely due to their readiness. First project is a Riverview Rio Salado project that's going to connect from Riverview under the 202 and 101 connecting into the Tempe system. This is the project Mark referenced. We got $1 million grant awarded recently, which is going to help us out a lot. This is about a 1.5 mile project. The second, and that's about 95% design, so we can engage that one pretty soon. The next one is in the initial stages of design. That's the West Mesa Connector. This is the one that'll connect from HoHoCom Stadium and go west, wrapping around the Mesa Country Club and connect over to Dobson. That's a little over, that's a 3-mile project.
Councilwoman Higgins.
Thanks. Thank you. Dan, where's that going? I just couldn't find, where's it going from Hohokam to Dobson, just roughly?
It follows the Crosscut Connect, canal,
the canal. Okay,
due west and wraps around into the Tempe Canal and comes in near Bass Pro, near Dobson.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
You bet. You want me to catch the third one, or we'll catch that after?
Oh, was there one more? The projects in 15-16 for completion, Medina and Haas, there's currently some improvements going on that site now, some street improvements to get us ready for that project. We've made, this is another area where we're looking at a potential grant opportunity with the Trust for Public Lands and, oddly enough, North Carolina State University to help us move forward with putting some exercise equipment, exercise paths in there. The Pioneer Park renovations, again, as I mentioned, a lot of the community outreach and stuff will start in advance of this. This is when we hope to have the project completed. And looking at the redevelopment of that site, continuing with our existing park improvements. And then the community conversion project at Mesa Junior High and working through that project. Again, those conversations are already ongoing with the school district of buildings to keep, their demolition plan for those that are not remaining, access points for school buses. All those discussions are currently ongoing. And as soon as we get those things worked out with the school district, we'll begin engaging the community and start focusing on moving that project along as well.
But again, Mark, this is a completion date.
Completion
date. It's going to take weeks. We'll be spending a lot of time early.
Absolutely.
On to get to that
with all these projects. And that was, again, something else we said. We would take all these projects back out to the communities and engage them and all the stakeholders to get feedback before we move towards final design.
The last bike and ped projects in Southeast Mesa is yet to be determined. We have a number of opportunities down there we're exploring right now. We have enough money to probably initiate or complete a design and maybe some construction. We'll continue to search for federal funds. We've been very fortunate in the last several years. We've gotten a lot of federal money, and we'll find some additional money to complete a great project down there.
16-17, the Signal Butte and Elliott development, which includes the we've completed the master plan on this site. This will start to begin the development of that. Moving forward, again, engaging the community in that original master plan, making sure it needs to be updated, and working with the expansion of the water treatment facility out there. In the renovation and enhancement projects, the Greenfield Park, the expansion of the lake there to bring that into the urban fishing program, and some other enhancements to that site. The museum and cultural resource expansion, which is the renovation of the old federal building at Pepper and McDonald to allow for expansion of the museum space. Existing park improvements will continue. And then again, final design after engagement with the community and stakeholders on Buckhorn Bass, Monterey Park, and then the completion of the PAL Mesa Education Center complex to complete that sports complex in West Mesa. As we've said, we've tried to target through these projects and back and forth as many areas of the city as possible. We've kind of put a map out there to give people an idea of where we're at and tried to color code that and pin it with years of completion and identifying where those bonds are coming from, whether it's general fund or the bond issue. So that, be happy to take any questions or direction.
Councilmember Glover, I know you had a question.
Personally, I'd like to see any project that is in downtown happen in conjunction with the light rail. So when light rail gets here, we'll have those down. So example, like the federal building and the museum and cultural resource expansion, if that could happen sooner rather than later, so then when light rail is finished, we can have all of our museums in downtown Mesa. And in just talking with Councilwoman Higgins, Pioneer Park should also be put up. It might not have the water feature, but any renovations would be done because that's where the light rail will be ending. And so anyone who gets off, they want to see a beautiful park and not Pioneer Park right now.
Other comments? Councilwoman Higgins.
Thank you, Councilwoman Kavanaugh. I would agree with the federal building. Anything, you know, the cultural activities downtown with the colleges all moving in and more students and parents checking us all out. I think anything we can do to finish those kind of projects sooner to highlight what we have in the city is going to be better for us and, you know, possibly the selling point. Well, they have historical stuff downtown, you know, who knows. But, you know, we're spending a lot of time and effort, right, obviously, on colleges and all that other stuff. So I think anything we can do to mobilize and stabilize and highlight and do everything we can for downtown is probably going to behoove us long term. So I'd like to see that stuff too move, but you know, I didn't know, as you heard earlier, who knew that we had these issues. So thanks.
I guess just to that point, I would concur with what Council Member Glover and Councilwoman Higgins said about the federal building, because right now, moving into the 16-17 year completion by that time, I think it raises several problems. One, the museum is in temporary space across the way with the Cactus League exhibit, and I suspect that space is going to be needed by other entities long before 16-17, probably the college entities. The other thing is in my own opinion, for the museum to be viable, it needs to move sooner than later from its location in Lehigh. And when the federal building was transferred by the U.S. government to the city in the late 1990s, it was intended for use as museum use, either for the Historical Museum, the Arizona Museum of Natural History, or both. And so I think it's important that that project be completed by the time that we open Light Rail. Any other comments from other councilmen? Councilmember Pinter.
I would agree with that logic. Seems pretty reasonable. You know, what the efforts we're trying to do with Amy and others, get that synergy going with the efforts of the college downtown, you know, all the colleges. And so I think, even though maybe to the peril of a couple of other of these, you know, we're all looking at our projects and that we kind of have in our districts, but I think that's probably a smart way to do things, get that federal. That has been on hold for so many years that... probably that last vital piece in that museum approach in the downtown. So
just to get some direction, and because to say what to move up, the question is what needs to move back. And I think it would be awkward for us to walk away from this meeting with that assumption that we're going to figure out what the council would like to do, because I don't want to take a guess at this and then come back and find out that it's something different than what you want to do. So. What we see is with Pioneer Park and the federal...
Yeah, Council,
before you go there, uh-huh. Can you explain the whole bond issue thing again and how, like, what, all right, the whole deal, like, so you have to spread it out over 4 years or it's going to cost more or less, well, or all that deal.
Right, and
go back to basics.
We've tried to look at the presentations that we provided the Council during this presentation. I think you'll find that on the slides that we've provided, it talked about it being a four-year program.
Remind us.
So it's
works.
A four-year program with the idea that we assume that we established the $70 million somewhere kind of as we were getting to scope out the projects. We established that kind of as a number based on, I think, a couple of things. One, trying to figure out how we could do a lot of different impactful projects, but also trying to be mindful of what that $70 million represented as a property tax increase. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of settled on that. I think it was 25 cents is, I think, what the council asked us to kind of maintain that as kind of the limit. And so we backed that in. We said, okay, at 25 cents, that can generate about $70 million. And we look at then the capacity for us to phase that in over a period of 4 years so that that's kind of how we assume this, the 25 cents would be relative to the average property tax rate. That could sustain that drawdown of selling of bonds about $17 million a year. So that's how we came up with it. So at the 70 million, the 25 cents also assumed that there's going to be a drawdown of $70 million. $70 million is a big number, even on an annual basis for us to do capital projects with just our capacity today. I can't remember what the number that we do today, Chuck. What is it? Yeah.
Okay, can I ask a question on that? What do you mean by our capacity to do whatever?
It's both the staff that has to oversee the design, construction elements, and we were going to bring on an additional staff person just in Parks and Recreation because you know, we've not done this magnitude of projects in a while, just oversee kind of like what Ross Renner does on the Cubs project today. That's his project. He's in coordination with the architects, the contractors, the subcontractors, coordinating between them, the city departments. And so there's a tremendous amount of administrative overhead that takes place that we want to make sure our projects are delivered with what we expect and on time. So we kind of have to manage kind of what our ability, along with not only these projects, but street projects and utility projects and all those. So that's kind of how we assess where we are. The 4-year time frame allows us to kind of divide that $70 million up. It allowed us to determine then what impact that would have on the property tax rate over a period of time. So
if you were to like move stuff, and we'll just say we had capacity to do all these things in 2.5 years, that would have changed the property tax rate from 25%?
I think it changes like the average, and I don't know. We'd have to kind of look at how that would be, because you're going to have to sell more early, so you're paying more debt early on. I mean, it's not dramatic, but there is an element of, you know, we're going to assume that when each year when we go to sell bonds, we're going to sell whatever the number is, 17 million of that is going to include general obligation bonds for parks. And so if we spread that out over the 4 years, then we can assume how much it's going to, what that tax rate is going to be. Now, if we were to accelerate that and try to do all this in 2 years, one, a couple of different factors. I mean, obviously, we can adjust that, and that we sell more bonds, we're going to have a higher property tax rate early on in order to cover that debt. But I will tell you, I think from a capacity, we'll have to add a lot more staff early on. And then the question, not early, I mean, it's just the fact to be able to push out that many projects in a quick period of time, I think will be significant.
Now, does it depend on how you like put the projects out on the market? So like currently, you know, how you write your, I don't know, are we writing RFPs for parks?
We'll do the RFQs and RFPs for the design consultants and architects and designers who'll come in.
Right.
Some of these projects, we need to do some programming, mm-hmm. And we want to do that. We've talked about it, Mark mentioned it several times, is we want to bring in who is kind of developing the concepts to have that done with charrettes, maybe with the community, with stakeholders, so we get that input before we kind of get into too far detail of a lot of final plans.
But depending on how you write what your requirements are from that design team, you could have the project leader not be a city employee and somebody watching over the project leader. I mean, there's different ways to do projects.
We ultimately, because we know that we're accountable for it, we will have project managers, mm-hmm. from the private sector, from architects and designers, but ultimately, we found that at the end of the day, you need to have an owner's rep on these projects. You need to have someone who says, this is my project that I'm going to live with for the next 75 years. And that's a different perspective than someone you're just paying from cradle to grave on a project and then they're done. We still, somewhere in this organization, there will be somebody overseeing that, mm-hmm. project. So that's, and I think we could ramp that up to try to push out the projects faster. I think there's a possibility we could try, you know, we may have to add another coordinator or so. I mean, we could try to push this in 3.5 years. It's just a lot of activity going on at one time. So that's just kind of the challenge we have. And it's sometimes it's not just an effort. It's really getting stakeholders and community people, and it's more of a logistics of people and ideas and getting everybody at the table together.
Councilmember Fincher.
Mr. City Manager, so it would, a couple of areas. I know as we talked to Ms. Ewing in engineering, costs are going up, you know, the things are recovering, but it would really be nice to hear from the bond council kind of the strategy. I know just enough that I see on CNBC to know what I hear about the bond market, but is there any opportunities now versus later, or later versus now, of how we sell those bonds? I know we saved the citizens $76 million right. by using some strategy.
And I think that we'll tell you the assumption we use on the interest rates on the payment of bonds, I think, gives us that flexibility. But go ahead, Larry.
Okay. Councilmember Fenter, your guess is as good as mine as to what interest rates are going to be in the next year. But clearly the Federal Reserve is out there buying almost all the treasuries that are being issued right now to keep overall rates low, and municipal bond rates track those, as you know. And so for the next year or so, it looks pretty certain that rates are going to continue at the state they're at now, which are historically low rates. And that's why we're going to be up here in a minute and talk about refinancing more bonds.
Oh, I didn't know.
But I can't really tell you what things are going to look like 2 years from now when that program comes off. We could spend 3 hours analyzing that.
Well, I didn't realize we have some discussion on refinancing, but that's what I was asking. Is now the time to maybe, as we talk about trying to accelerate, get some of these bonds out there at these historically low rates? And
the Arizona Department of Transportation sold 700 million bonds yesterday, and the I want to say the 25-year yield was about 2.6%. And if you go back a ways, as you and I both do, and you look back historically at where those rates have been at, that's historically low.
Amazing.
I mean, that's all I can tell you as of yesterday. And when we talk about the refunding bonds, we'll talk about some assumptions there. We just have to be ready to act should the bond market continue in its favorable course.
Well, and that's why I ask, when you hear from the council, hey, we'd love to accelerate this, I think they hear from the constituents, if the bond market is so amazingly low on interest rates, is there a strategy here? I know it's a little scary to try and figure out how to do something in a year's time, but.
Well, Councilmember Kavanaugh, Councilmember Finter, even more important than the other unknown in the tax rate, we assumed pretty much a flat assessed valuation for the city because of the, you know, assessed valuation destruction we've seen over the last 5 years. Word is from the county assessor, and Chuck can come up here and talk about it, that the assessed value is going to start going up.
Yeah.
More than interest rates, that's going to be what determines the tax rate out to overall for the city. And that's another big unknown, is how fast is the housing going to recover on the tax rolls? And if it recovered sufficiently, potentially you could do bond issues faster and not have an increase in the tax rate. But that's another unknown, and that's much bigger in my mind than the interest rate on the bonds, is what's the tax base going to look like.
There's always a two-year lag, right?
So yeah. Let me ask a question, Council. Councilor Kavanaugh, Council, would you allow us maybe to come back? I'm hearing what you're saying, and you know, would you allow us to come back and maybe present to you maybe a 3-year program?
I think that could be reasonable, because I think in looking at the projects here, I mean, I wish I had a project to trade for the federal building, but the only project in my district is already at the tail end; it will be completed after I leave office. So. But what I would like to at least you to look at, the projects that you identified, the non-transportation projects that you identified, like for fiscal year 14-15, could possibly any of those be delayed or moved to a different line and move the federal building up into that schedule?
Right.
Because I think the goal of what the direction is from council is that find a way that project is complete by the time that light rail opens.
And the idea with the federal, and this is the Gilbert Road extension opening, right? No, I was kidding. what we could do is, I hear that specific one, and that may allow us, because frankly, we could take what I'm kind of trying to do a little bit here. I'm trying to manage Mark's resources, but with a federal building, maybe we can pull that out of the parks, you know, necessarily under parks, and we can find somewhere else in the organization to assign that and see if we can move that up. And then let me see what I can do. We can talk a little bit about Pioneer Park, and then see if there's some flexibility. But if I really think I'm going to need, I guess I always try to manage expectations, and 4 years we felt pretty comfortable with. I think at 3 years, I mean, there's just a lot of work. I mean, and Councilman Fincher would know, just, and others, just, I mean, even with the school district, trying to work through the logistics of some of those projects doesn't come speedily sometimes. And so if we could have 3 years and maybe look to move, even maybe move the federal building further up, maybe it's a 2-year window, is that something that maybe we could come back to the council with?
I think there's direction from council there. Councilwoman Higgins had a question.
It was kind of something you said earlier. Could you actually tell us what the difference would be in the bond?
I'd have to go back, and we'd have to run the numbers
right,
and check.
Right, obviously. So, you know, is it twice as much, or is it penny more or something? So,
and I think when we assume the assumption of the drawdowns of the $7 million over 4 years, we assume, and we're pretty conservative, we have to be on what the rates were. I think we were in the 5% range or something like that. So I mean, really where we take that savings typically is we then come back and tell the council we can lower the tax rate or something like that. We don't necessarily change the acceleration of the program, but because then there's other elements. It's not just the tax. I mean, tax rate's one component of it, but certainly it's just our ability to staff and ramp this up. But maybe there's some division of labor we can, division of projects within the city that we can work out that maybe will help us move some of these projects a little bit faster.
Very good. Councilor Richards.
Yeah, I'm just trying to synthesize what I've heard from everybody here, and it seems like there's this general theme about wanting to be done with construction on parks projects when the light rail is done, so that there's, because we do the construction of parks projects in downtown concurrent with the light rail construction, and then have that done when light rail opens. Is that
what I think what the council is suggesting or direction is that, at least in terms of the federal building specifically, to ensure that that work is done so the historic museum has moved and is up and running by the time the first leg of the light rail is completed to Mesa Drive, and then to look to see if there's an opportunity on the Pioneer Park site, whether that can accelerate as well, because to try to be completed or have as much work done again when that leg of light rail
opens. The transitional construction points, because you have
right.
in the beginning and
right.
So at what point Pioneer Park needs to be complete? That's what I'm not,
I think the higher priority would be for the museum as it's farther back, so that the museum district itself is really brought to kind of a completion.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll work on that.
Museum, then Pioneer Park.
And we'll try to see what we can.
Right.
Now, some of these projects, I will tell you, for example, where is it? Like Signal Butte and Elliott. One of the reasons that's out that year is because it's also in conjunction with the water treatment plant, let me get the right, development that's taking place out there. So it's really, that's intended to be a coordinated project out in the fourth year. So it's actually fits better. So there may be still some four-year projects, but they're really, there's a purpose for it. It's syncing up with something else out there. But well, certainly I hear the federal building is a priority. Let's see how, frankly, what I hear is as soon as possible to get that one done. And then Pioneer Park, if there's some elements of that we can move forward, we'll try to do that. Now, I think as Council Member Glover has generously suggested, is that one of the things that happened with when we went from Mesa High Pool to the Taylor, back to the Taylor Pool option, we ended up allocating dollars to Taylor Pool and the Pioneer Park. We think we're hearing that the school district is now willing to consider going back to the Mesa High Pool location there at the corner of
Harris
and Southern. And so we will do that. And what the school district's looking at is their cost to, pave the area in the back where the, driver's ed used to be. And then that would replace some of the parking that the pool would take up in the front. So I think they're trying to determine, and maybe they have to date, that they have found the resources that they can do that. That will allow us to put the pool up front. What that will mean is we'll pull back the funds that were allocated, a portion. There's a portion that went to Pioneer Park, and then obviously all the dollars that went to Taylor, we'll bring those back. And maybe by the time we bring back this revised timeline, we'll maybe have that resolved, and we can show you that new number. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's good. Are there any other questions for Mark or Dan?
I guess the thing for you is as the projects come online, what that does to operating
budget.
You know, because that's going to be, I mean, it's exciting to do a lot of new projects and everything. I saw the $2.25 million number, which I thought was a little bit lower than I would have anticipated with all those kind of projects coming mm-hmm. along and the quality that we're doing.
Yeah.
But getting an idea of which fiscal year, you know, where we're going to see the major increases and how we're going to get there.
And Mark's been working with the budget office to build that into our forecast.
Yeah.
So we'll have that. And I think where the council, we need to have this conversation, and fairly soon it sounds like too, is with the renovations of the federal building. Right now, there is, we need to work through the assumption of the tenancy and who's going to be responsible for the operations of that building also. Because as we program that, whoever occupies that, whether it's the Historical Museum or Cactus, I mean, the question we need to have somewhat resolved too is the operational cost going forward for that building also. So that's something we'll need to work through.
Great. Well, Mark, you're going to be a very busy person, and Dan, we know you're always busy on transportation. But Mark is going to be, Mark is going to be even more busy. Mark, you're going to have to clone yourself. Thank you very much. Okay. Next item is to hear a presentation on all our different bonds, refunding bonds.
Good morning, council members. Chuck Odom. We've already had a lot of debt discussion this morning, but this is part of our ongoing maintenance of existing debt. So Mike Kennington and myself, in conjunction with Larry Gibbon, with Gus Rosenfeld, who's financial advisor, and our bond counsel, with Scott Ruby and Sarah Smith, with Gus Rosenfeld. It's part of our annual process. We wanted to just present some refunding opportunities this morning. Last year we were very aggressive out there, and so the numbers you'll see this year are not as great, but they're always something that we should be taking advantage of. So this year we're only proposing doing some refundings on our tax exempt bonds, and we're looking at up to $25 million in our general obligation refunding bonds, $150 million in our revenue bonds in the utility system, and our highway user revenue bonds of about $25 million. So we'll be going through several series, and I've listed those here, of what possible series that currently exist that we'd be affecting with these refundings and looking for possible savings. So just to give you a breakdown based on December estimates of where we were, and this is, we're always on the conservative side, actual results are going to be different. Some of the new things that we're going to have to consider this year is going to be some of the arbitrage. Last year we were very aggressive, as I mentioned. I think we resulted, if I remember correctly, about $72 million over 5 years in savings. So we were very aggressive. So we're looking this year at total at about $7 million in total savings possibility. But we'll be looking at, because we were so aggressive last year, at the negative arbitrage we'll be creating with some of these deals. So we'll come back with you after.
I have a question. Last week, I was at the winter board meeting for National League of Cities, and there was extensive discussion that meeting on possible proposals regarding municipal tax exempt financing. Mm-hmm. Are you factoring that into an element of risk in terms of what we want to do?
What that would factor into is, if it did occur, then we'd reassess where we are on each of these, as we would even just going through the normal process of closing these deals. Anything that changes from the time we talk to you to the time we execute the agreements, we would take any of those factors.
Let me just ask a question, Larry. What's the spread today between tax-exempt and taxable bonds?
Councilmember Kavanaugh, Mr. Brady, it's about equal. It's about 100% right now, close to it. And it's simply a matter of the Treasury's being held artificially low because the Federal Reserve is buying most of the bonds right now. And they're holding, so municipal bond rates float more to the marketplace of supply and demand. And right now, demand is mostly for treasuries with the Fed. So if that makes any sense, the taxable rates, the benchmarks, are U.S. treasuries, and they're being held artificially low to try to keep mortgage rate low and the cost of government borrowing low. At some point, that trade's going to come off. And it might float back to its more normal results, where you might be at 90 to 95% of treasuries with municipal bonds. But right now, it's close to 100% of the same rate, just because the government's keeping those treasury rates low.
So if they'll do that for the next 20 years, we'll be okay.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what happens. We're in a whole new world here. We don't know what's going to happen once the Fed starts to liquidate their positions on all these trillions of dollars in bonds.
But based on historical comparisons of the spread between taxes and taxable, there would be a fiscal impact to the cost of issuing debt. I mean, for that we've enjoyed that tax exempt status all these years, so well, there would be an impact.
Right, because it's been like they were first permitted like 100 years ago, I think, in 1913. But there was a case of mild to medium hysteria at the meetings last week and about the potential here, and so it's something that we have to. I know all the municipal organizations are watching that, and everybody who issues tax-exempt financing.
Well, Councilmember Kavanaugh, the big issue I think you probably are talking about is the Obama administration has floated out there the idea of having a minimum tax rate of 28%, regardless of your taxes and bond holdings and so forth, for wealthier individuals. And so that would remove the advantage wealthy individuals have in buying municipal bonds. Why would they be interested if they're still going to get taxed on 28% of that interest? And that's the thing that's kind of spooking the bond markets and the government officials out there, is puts us back into almost a taxable mode. I think the only other thing I can tell you about the relationship between municipals and and treasuries is that if we go to a taxable mode like that for municipal bonds, municipal debt is sold as a spread to the treasury rates. In other words, your benchmark is U.S. treasuries, and then there's, depending on the ratings of the bonds, there's a spread built in, like 100 basis points or 1% or 2% above what the treasuries are. So it's, Mr. Brady was indicating, if we go into that mode where we don't have fully tax-exempt bonds anymore, rates will go substantially higher for municipal debt. And so we have to be aware of that. And that's, as Chuck was saying, we always want to be flexible. We've put a lot of bonds in here that right now don't look like they can be refinanced economically, but we only want to come to the council once. And if circumstances suddenly change, which with all the stuff that's going on in Washington right now, anything could happen, we just want to be in a position to take advantage. As an example, when we talked to staff back in early December about these issues, and which is the source of Chuck's numbers here, I got interest rates back from the bond underwriters that were selected yesterday on the GO and the street and highway. It was almost like they're exactly the same as we talked about in December. But between December and now, there's just been this roller coaster of rates, and we just happened to today be back to where we were in early December. And I'd like to say we're geniuses or something, but it just shows you where the market could go. And so don't expect to see necessarily $150 million of utility bonds brought back as a final number. Right now we're looking at something in the neighborhood of $90 to $100 million realistically. But we want to have you authorize the maximum amount we could possibly conceive of if the market conditions suddenly for some reason go our way.
And that's the action you're going to ask us to look at on the 28th, correct?
Right. So as an example, if suddenly we wanted to come back and add more bonds, we'd have to come back to the council later.
Yeah.
Rather than do that, let's just have an authorization that gets us to where we could conceivably go on to refinancing.
Right. And to that kind of that point, we will be asking for your authorization on the 28th, but we'll be flexible and give you the results after we get the actual closings on these deals, as we did last year. So we'll give you a summary of what we did incur on these financings in a study session. These deals are all structured to incur most of the savings in 12-13 current fiscal year, and it doesn't add anything to the debt's schedule. It doesn't add any years on to any of these debt issuances. So the 28th, as we talked about, we want to receive the authorization through resolution to sell the bonds. The weeks of March 4th and 11th will go to market and price these bonds, and hope to close all of them the week of the 1st of April.
Council members, one other thing I've mentioned in the previous conversation about making projections of the park bond tax rates. We have a very important number coming out of the assessor's office in about 3 weeks. I think it's the week of the 18th of February. Well, they'll give us next year's assessed valuations. Mm. And generally, you don't change after they give us the February estimates.
Only small.
And that would give us and Chuck a chance to really do something realistic. If we do something between now and then, we're still guessing on the AV for next year from which we build future AVs. So I would ask you just to give us some time here and wait till we actually have that number, because then we can be much more precise.
Which, yeah, and that's important. And also is important because in the last 2 or 3 years, we've had to ask the council, while maintaining the tax levy, you know, or the payment that we needed for debt, we've had to actually raise the rate because of the drop in the evaluation. So maybe we're going to see some stabilization so we don't have to come to council for those kind of requests.
The volatility over the last 2 years, we've asked based about 36 to 37% drop in AV.
So we've had to adjust our rate to maintain the payment during that time. So there may be some different news, better news.
I've heard both things.
Okay.
So. Great. Are there any other questions or comments? Well, good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is to hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. I know it's a busy time of year. Anybody have anything to report of note?
Not since Monday.
Not since Monday. All right. Scheduling of meetings and general information.
Mr. Kavanaugh, Councilmember Kavanaugh, and Council. Next, we will not have a study session next Thursday, the 24th. There will be the Chamber of Commerce Mayor's Breakfast will be that morning. Our next council meeting will be on the 28th. Reminder again, this Saturday from 8:30 to noon will be the Mesa Grande Cultural Center grand opening, located at 1000 Date Street. There will be a traditional, Ohotam blessing of the site and the ribbon cutting and free pancake breakfast. So invite everybody to that.
And tomorrow morning, District 3 residents are having coffee with me.
Yes,
at Adelante Health Clinic from 7:30 to 8:30. And Fire Chief Harry Beck is the guest speaker.
Good.
Anything else? Any items from citizens present?
No requests, sir.
Okay. We'll entertain a motion to adjourn. So adjourn. We're done. All right. Thank you.
Awesome.